relationships. As humans, we're hardwired for them. What would it be like to have a guide to relationships that are authentic? Tap into the collective wisdom of teachers, authors, and healers who have accumulated experience on this subject. I've learned that there are overlapping soul circles of people in our lives. Family of choice. Welcome to the family.
Welcome to It's All About Relationships. I'm your host, Evie Weinstein, and the music that lulls us in and lulls us out of the show was written by my friend Barry Goldstein, and it's called Prayer of the Heart. His music is at barrygoldsteinmusic.com. And as I was talking about this yesterday, I was telling someone about the music. It occurred to me that there's a heartbeat rhythm that goes along with it. So that's what the show is about, is coming from the heart. And every guest that we have has a heartfelt story to share, and today's guest is no stranger to coming from the heart. His name is Ryan Skinner, and the show today is going to be about redefining yourself, teaching others how to make life-changing choices. So, Ryan, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you very much. I appreciate you having me on.
Oh, my pleasure. So the man that I'm speaking to now, right now, is a successful financial planner, highly respected, clean-cut guy. Roll back the clock, I don't know how many years, and who were you back then? What was life like before this image?
Wow. Yeah, life was, to say the least, life was very, very different, and I laugh just because it's a nervous laugh. My life was this. I was a heroin addict at the end. I was shaking a cup, asking for money to buy drugs. I had lost my business. I had married somebody I probably should have married, and it ruined a marriage with her. I was a cancer in everybody's life. There's no other way to put it. I was a very, very sick individual, and I felt a lot of pain, and unfortunately, I caused a lot of pain.
So how, I mean, this is not an easy topic for anybody to talk about. So first of all, I want to honor you and acknowledge you for being this transparent about who you were then and who you begin for you, and how did it progress?
Okay. Well, it's kind of interesting. First of all, thank you. But I believe in order to keep what you have, you got to give it away. It's very necessary for me to help other people. God gave me another shot. And I truly believe my only purpose here on earth is to be a service to others and help people get better. And just be anybody. I don't care if it's an addict or an alcoholic, somebody who's just poor for no reason, or somebody who's just depressed, or just be of service to my family. You know, charity starts at home, being honoring and respecting my fiance, you know, treating her like the woman she deserves, you know. The disease you want to start where it progressed? Is that where you want it to go off from?
How did the addiction begin and how did it progress?
Okay, it's interesting with me. I tell people I wasn't supposed to be a drug addict. The way it started out, I mean, through high school, as a child, I had a lot of anxieties, a lot of nervousness. In high school, I would drink, but I would only drink a little because I had an uncle who was an alcoholic, and I remember he was just such a bad guy. And I remember thinking to myself, I'm never going to be that. So I would have one or two drinks, but because of my anxiety, I was always afraid of dying from this or dying from that. So therefore, I didn't drink a whole lot. I would be the guy who goes to a party and holds a drink, maybe has two. My senior year, I started to experiment a little with alcohol, but again, nothing, there were no signs of alcoholism or drug addiction. In college, I started to drink a little bit more, and I noticed something. When I drank, I couldn't stop. So I didn't drink a whole lot because I was afraid that I wouldn't stop. And that should have been a sign, and it probably was, and I just didn't notice it. And so I got through college because it was very, 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 very money-driven. I grew up in, middle class, but, not a lot, nothing comfortable. And I saw my parents work their butts off, two hardest-working people I knew, both always two jobs. My mom was a housekeeper, scrubbing people's toilets to put food on the table. And, but there was always enough. They took care of us. So, I just wanted to make sure I was okay financially. And I also wanted to make sure that someday I could help them financially. So I was so driven, I got through college. In college, I got a job at this bar. And there were a lot of all-pro athletes going in there, all high-end financial guys. And there was a lot of money, a lot of girls, and a lot of stuff I didn't have because I was so insecure. I was just a painfully shy, insecure guy. I was what I call surface social. I would talk to people. I'd be upbeat. Mm-hmm. I'd be happy. But inside, I would be too insecure. I thought I was the ugliest, dumbest, just not even enjoyable person. And so because of my self-image, that made me want to be like these people. I saw these guys. I said, I want to be like that. These guys have no stress. They're having fun. And it's funny. You idolize something long enough, you become that. These guys run around on their wives. They just lived a fast life, cocaine, girls, Vegas, all that BS. And when I graduated college, I was living at my parent girl's house because my father didn't like my behaviors, and he told me that, you know, I couldn't stay. And my father's a guy with solid integrity, so, you know, when he told me that, I left. And when I was graduating college, I said to my father, can I come home? And I was living with a girl, but she wasn't going the right direction. I knew I wasn't either. And he said, yeah. So I moved home, but he gave me some rules, you know, curfew. I had to change my behaviors. And when I moved home, I hadn't drank in 9 months. I just didn't drink. I was trying to get my stockbroker's license and my insurance license, all this stuff. So I just behaved myself. And then once I got all that, I would drink here and there professionally, like when I was out with folks from work. And then it just progressed. I would get bored at the end of the day. You know, I was young, and I would think, well, financial advisors always drink. So every day I'd wind down with a glass of scotch, and then it was a few, and then it was a bunch. Drew a couple of surgeries on my hand. I had Percocet a few times, and the first time I had it, I'll never forget, I got 16 pills, which was a strange number. And I would take those pills only on the weekends, me and a friend, just to feel good. I never took it for the pain. And when they ran out, I'm going to tell you the truth, it wasn't a big issue. I was fine. You know, I thought, wow, I like those, but nothing I can do. I ended up finding somebody who sold them, and they were just 5 milligram Percocet. And I would buy, you know, I had good money, so I'd buy 100 and just let them last as long as they lasted, you know. And then I needed more each day, so I was going for more of them and more of them. Then it got bad, and I remember running out once and feeling so sick because I was withdrawing. And I remember thinking to myself, oh, my God. And rather than think, geez, you know, I should never do these again, after I got through the 3 or 4 day window of not having them and I got started feeling better, I thought to myself, the solution here is just never run out. So I started buying, you know, a lot. And people, in fact, one of my friends who's a lieutenant in the police department, who wrote a big blog on my website, he was the head of the narcotics division, thought I was selling drugs. I had so many I would buy. That's how my usage was. And it was scary. And it got real, real bad. And then I had another surgery, and it progressed to OxyContin. And then over a period of like 2 or 3 years, I mean, I blew through literally between what I had liquid and what I earned, probably $1.4 million, $1.5 million. I mean, I spent $1,000 a day on pain medication. And then after, you know, like it always does with addicts, you know, got to the point where it progressed a little further. I was out of money, and it turned to heroin. And I got to tell you, when I tell you drugs, people say drugs were a problem. They weren't for me. They were a solution. Suddenly, I was better looking, smarter, funnier. My business grew. I mean, on the outside, when I first started doing the drugs, everything got better. I had faster cars, faster girls. Just everything looked faster, like, on, you know, and it just looked more exciting. And on the inside, it was so lonely. It was just so lonely, you know. And at the end, I mean, I had two beautiful stepkids. Now, I tell you, I shouldn't have married that girl. We didn't click. But my stepkids were amazing. I loved them to the best of my ability, and I still love them. I think of them every day, and I have to tell you, like, drugs and alcohol, they didn't take things from me, and that's the worst part. They didn't take anything. When somebody says drugs took something, they don't. They cause us to become weak enough, and they change our values, and they put us in a spot where we give things away, and that's the most painful thing. It's easier to be robbed of something than to choose to give it away and then look back and think, wow, I was a scumbag. And that's how a lot of my life went, and, you know, at the end, my behaviors just got out of control. I was getting arrested all the time, and it wasn't tough guy stuff or gangster stuff or even, like, bad thief stuff. It was, you know, drug addicts, alcoholics, DUIs, resisting arrest, you know, getting into a fight, that sort of stuff. It was just stupid stuff that happens to addicts and alcoholics. And
well,
that's what I like.
I'm getting goosebumps as you're saying this because I've been an addictions counselor 30-some years, something like that. And you're the first person, I mean, I was taking notes as you were writing. The drugs weren't a problem. They were a solution. Everything looked faster on the inside, on the outside, and better on the outside, but lonely on the inside. I wasn't supposed to be an addict. I've heard that one before. But this is just absolutely amazing. Nobody plans on being an addict. So on the other side of the break,
I had two parents.
Oh, God, yeah. It's amazing. I mean, as you know, we're going on into break now, but on the other side of the break, we're going to talk about the flip side, how you emerged, how you ascended from the depths of addiction. So my guest is Ryan Skinner, and you can go to his website. It's Ryan, R-Y-A-N, takingstock.com. And that's a very clever double entendre because his work is in the financial field. So catch you on the other side, folks.
You're listening to Vivid Life Radio Talk Radio that connects you to the most current, optimistic, and inspiring conversations on the planet. Get ready to be catapulted into your happiest, healthiest, and wealthiest life ever. Go to vividlife.me. That's vividlife.me for details on our previous and upcoming conversations with the world's brightest minds sharing their wisdom for happier, healthier, and wealthier lives.
It's All About Relationships is a gathering of friends worldwide. I'm your host, Edie Weinstein. Join us each Thursday night from 8 to 8:30 Eastern Standard Time. My guests are dynamic leaders in the field of human interaction, and no topic is off the table, from sexuality to spirituality to self-love. I'm a best-selling author, speaker, therapist, interfaith minister, and optimistic who sees the world through the eyes of possibility. Visit me at opti-mystical.com.
What does your vivid life look like? What does it feel like to be living a vivid life every single day? How do you start? What's the first step for you personally to make the shift that you've been seeking? Find out now. Vivid Life. It's a happier, healthier, wealthier state of being. Get there today by following us on Facebook, Twitter, or subscribing to our free inspirations in your inbox at vividlife.me.
Welcome back to the next portion of It's All About Relationships. My guest is Ryan Skinner, and we were talking about his descent into addiction. Now on the other side, we're going to be talking about how he ascended, how he pulled himself out or got help pulling himself out. So, Ryan, what was the aha moment, the pivotal moment that said, okay, I'm not doing this anymore, I'm done?
Yeah, it's funny you should ask that. I had a real big white light experience. Excuse my voice. I've been speaking, giving work seminars.
That's okay.
Yeah, that's a luxury now. So I'm 2000, God, I want to say 11 or 12. It's so foggy. I'm in my jail cell, and the tier I'm on is in Cambridge, Mass., okay? And at the end of the tier, you can look down, and you can see this office. And this was the office that at a young age, these lawyers had adopted me to mentor me, and they were giving me monster clients. And I had a parking spot there, and I had a nice office there, and I had a business that was just, all these cases were handed to me, and I had it all, and I had the spot right from my jail cell. I could see down and see where I used to park my nice Mercedes and go to my nice office, and nice, and here I am at the bottom, and I thought to myself, a couple of things. One, how did this happen? Like, I know how it happened, but how did it not get stopped before now? And my next thing was, God, you give me one more shot, and I won't drop the ball. And that was it. He gave me one more shot. I said, I won't drop the ball. I'll do it. And to this day, it's just that's what it's always been about.
Mm-hmm. So did you have any particular mentors or supports that have gotten you through it?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I had a gentleman named Billy, who is now my sponsor, who really, he was there for me. You know, the guy, he taught me how to live again, and I didn't know how to live. I didn't know how to live like a solid man. I was a scared little kid, and I needed a lot of guidance. You know, I'm also bipolar, so there was a lot of stuff going on with me, and I need somebody who would be gentle with me but hard on me, understanding. And this guy was it. You know, he was the real deal. He used to drink like me, drugs like me. He got arrested like me, and here he was. He had a great, successful job and nice guy, and he was a big, tough guy, but he was gentle with guys. Like, he'd be – you'd think he was going to be rough around the edges, but he'd be kind. And he'd always be kind to the worst person, the sickest person in the room, the person who everybody just wrote off. Like, I was the last dog in the race, and he bet on me, you know, and he took me under his and he would tell me it's going to be okay. And it didn't seem like it was going to be okay, I'll be honest. And I do that now. I get guys, I say to them, I'm like, it's going to be okay. And they're like, what makes you say that? I'm a mess. And my answer is this, because you're me.
Yeah.
And it's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, does that help when somebody sees you as, you know, that you're not that different from, you know, because we have this image of what a drug addict looks like, and they come in all shapes and sizes and socioeconomic backgrounds. So when you speak to people, when you give back, do you tell them that too? You're me. I'm your mirror.
Yeah, well, I mean, the program I run up at jail, I've got some guys that really connected to me because I go up there and they see this guy walking in, you know, suits and a dress shirt. But they know from the counselors up there and my reputation up there that, you know, I was them. And I tell them, listen, that was me. And I've got a way out. I was shown this way out, and I can show you there's a way out. I'll lead you there. And a couple of these guys have really taken it, And I have one young kid who's 34, and he spent about 17 years of his life in and out of prison. And he's getting it. And he's calling me at night, like, talking about God. You know, I get my phone bills through the roof because every time they call, it's 10 bucks a call. And I get these guys, I'm telling all of them, call me anytime, call any night, you know, and I love it. I'm so blessed that I can afford to take that call, that I can be on this end of the line and not on that end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think when you were saying that, I was envisioning the movie Bruce Almighty with Jim Carrey, and he was kind of prayer central, you know, where all the people were contacting him, and I envision you being like that, like, okay, you know, Ryan, help us out here, because we know that you walk the talk. So I think that has a lot to do with it. So what do you believe about yourself now? I know what you believed about yourself before. You'd mentioned that, you know, that you weren't enough. What do you believe about you now that enables you to help other people believe in themselves?
You know, I got a connection to something greater. I mean, when I fell to the bottom, you need a connection with a power greater than yourselves. And for me, I got a connection with what I would call God. And I don't think it's some guy in the sky. I think it's some kind of energy that, you know, keeps it. You go to the ocean, a beautiful day. You see the sun and the water and the seagulls and little kids playing on the beach. And you think, geez, something created all this. And there's some energy, you know. We're all the same. And we're all tied. You know, we're all one. So I just believe that I'm who I'm supposed to be. I always say I'm not perfect, but I'm perfectly me. Like, I'm exactly who today, I'm the guy God made me to be. Now, I'm not exactly the person I want to be. I have some goals and aspirations and things I need to work on, but I know I'm sure as hell not the guy I once was. And I know that each and every day, you know, I hit my knees and I say, God, let me be a service to people while I use my talents, whether it's professionally or personally. And then I just get out of the way and just try to let Him do the legwork.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that idea. And what, besides your sponsor, what else sustains you? I know it's a multimodal approach to recovery.
Mine's an interesting approach.
Yeah.
I have to do a lot. For me, I always tell people, I was a pretty sick guy, so it takes a lot. I get up every morning and literally hit my knees, and I pray to a God that, to me, you know, called the higher power, called that source of energy. There's something out there. And I just ask, you know, work through me, you know, and just I try to think I'm going downstream, and I try not to put the paddles in too much, and just guide it a little and just go through my day and do what I'm supposed to be doing, whatever crosses my path. I spend about a half hour in the morning between prayer, and I do a bunch of positive readings from different books, and then I do, you know, daily reflections from different books, and I journal. And then at the end of the day, I do some of those same things, but a smaller amount, but then I do more journaling. And I, you know, I write down my highlight film, the top five things that happened to me that day that would have never happened if I was still using. Then I also write down five new people to pray for, and I just try to send out good waves, good energy, like good thoughts for them. And then at the end, I write a letter to God, and it's, you know, just about my day. And I'm basically asking that source, that energy, to continue to guide me and saying thank you for everything I got that day. You know, I have a lot of adversities that pop up still because, you know, you clean up wreckage of the past. But I'll tell you this, I thank God for every one of them because it strengthens me.
Mm-hmm. And I've had so many people in my life, both personally and professionally, have said thank God for, including addiction, including the mess that they made, that they, you know, things that they wouldn't have had the opportunity to experience.
That's so true. I mean, I'll give an example.
Grateful recovering addict. You know, I've heard people say that.
I am so the best thing that ever happened to me. I have to say, and I, you know, I have an amazing mother who's my rock, and I have a fiance who I hit the lottery with. She's just the best. Mm-hmm. She's the best thing that ever happened to me. But the only thing better is addiction. By becoming an addict to recovering, I got a connection to something so much greater than all these things, so much greater than anything I've ever had on earth. And it's just, it's nice. I have a purpose now. My purpose isn't to go just worry about Ryan, get in shape, make money, this sort of stuff. That's nice. It's to be a service to help people.
Yeah. And you do that through a number of different avenues. One of them is Ryan's Fund. Can you explain what that is? I was just blown away when I heard about it.
Well, you know, Tom guided me to start that. You know, my PR guy, Tom Esty, is just nothing short of amazing. When I was talking to Tom, I told him about what really prompted me to want to start paying it forward more is May 1st of last year, I'm reading the cover of the Herald in Boston, and there's a little girl named Jocelyn on it, and there's a picture of her holding a picture of both her parents. Both had overdosed within 2 weeks of one another and were dead. Nobody in her family wanted her, so she's up for adoption. She's in an orphanage. And so I reached out and said, you know, I'd be interested in adopting this young lady. And their response was, because of my past, I would not be able to do so. you know. So here, and she was being involved with the Catholic Church because the back in that community, there's a church that helps the kids and helps like bury the folks at the overdose, and you know, and of course I'm sitting here thinking, geez, somebody in the Catholic Church is judging me, but regardless, I said, okay, how can I pay it forward? And I literally have that Herald in my room right now, and I'm keeping it. I've kept it ever since then, and I kept praying, God, let me help this child. Let me make some kind of a difference. My thought was, you know, if I adopted her, my fiance is in recovery. She has three kids. Maybe this girl will get a shot at a life, you know. But I understand their point. You know, they have to look out for those sort of things. This, the whole purpose of this fund is to raise money to help kids that lost parents to addiction so they don't have to become another number. You know, they don't have to go through the foster program, get, you know, all the nasty things that happen in that system, then not get an education, then do drugs. We, you know, we owe these kids more. And then any extra funds we have in there, if there's somebody like that we're not helping, there's other people who are in recovery. There's just other people pouring me. We live, I know that, you know, the guys I do business with, there's a circle of us that have lunch once every 2 months. And in that room, there's probably millions upon millions of dollars. I mean, I said something, if each of us gave 5% of what we made, we would have such a profound impact. You know, as people, we owe it to help other people. And a lot of us don't.
So do you find that people in your circles give back, that they're, you know, that you've been able to encourage them to be generous as well?
You know, it's hard to say because they all say they do, but, you know, I always tell people, show me you're grateful. It's an action word. You want, you know,
I like
you're grateful
that.
If you're, you know, I tell people you're in love with somebody. Yeah. I don't just tell my fiance I'm in love with her. I show her, you know, and that's what you're supposed to do to people. And yeah, so I don't know. A lot of them will say, oh, I did that. I'm going to do this, this, and this, but words are empty. I would, you know, again, show me. Yeah. If you're going to do this, this, and this, go. You don't have to tell me. I'll find out that you did it. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. I think it's, what is it, if somebody shows you who they are for the first time, believe them. You know, actions speak louder than words. I grew up with that idea as well.
Absolutely.
So I certainly go with that. How many families do you feel, you know, since Lion's Fund got created, how many would you say that have been helped?
I don't know, to be very candid with you, because a lot of what I do is I get involved with the Woburn Council concerning Woburn, and there's a woman over there, Sandy, and she's absolutely amazing. And she's enabled me to donate money there and donate gift cards. And she's put it to work. She knows where I want it to go. You know, she's not putting it in so they can build a new park down at the school park or doing this and that. She's putting it to families. You know, this summer we'll be making sure the kids have flip-flops and bathing suits.
Yeah. So the things that we take for granted, those, you know, those of us that are not dealing with this, so simple, basic kind of things. So,
you
want to
hear something
I think that's marvelous. Please,
here's something that was tragic. So what we do every year, the Woburn Counseling Concern has these families, you know, you've heard about it, the people put down what their kids want for Christmas. So every year I do one thing for me for a family. I do one from my business and one from my mother. Or one, you know, I do a bunch of families I adopt. And every year the list is so tragic. I mean, little kids will ask for socks or a pillow. You know, so of course I get them the socks, a pillow, and then 50 other things because then I think it's so sad.
Right.
But I think to myself, isn't that sad that a little child who's 5 years old is asking for socks or pajamas? You know what I mean? Like, these kids should be asking for trucks. So I don't know what kids ask for, but it shouldn't be that.
Yeah. So it's the basic things. And chances are, I'm not saying that you would have been a kind, generous person anyway, but chances are because of what you experienced, you had this epiphany that said, all right, I've had so many people give to me, now it's time to give back. So
you know, it's strange. Yeah. It's funny you say that. And this is a piece of advice people can take. I always lived it, and I'm lucky. Be careful on the way up, because on the way down, you pass those same people. On the way up, before, I still donated a lot of money. I still donated. I did financially, I don't think I donate any more now than I did then. I was very, very generous. I always had $100 like I do now, in $1 bills under the seat of my car. So when I go places where people are begging for money, I can give them money.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is now when I pull over and I give them money, I'll ask them their name and I'll ask if they want me to buy them a coffee. And that night I'll pray for that person and I'll give them my business card. I'll say, hey, here's my cell number on here. I'll tell you what, if you want to keep living this way and you're okay with it, that's your business. But I'll tell you what, if you want to change and you want a better way of life, I'll make it my business. Call me. And, you know, I've had 3-4 guys in the last couple of months call me, and, you know, I've helped them get into halfway houses and sober houses. You know, a few guys get out of jail, like, you know, you buy them a couple of things for clothes and some provisions and all that jazz. And I'm blessed to be able to do the stuff I'm able to do.
Yeah, and it sounds like it's personal, that they're not just numbers, they're not faceless people, they're people with names and histories and families. So you're not just connecting financially, you're connecting heart to heart with the folks that you touch in your life, and I bless you for what you do. So again, folks, if you want to learn more about what Ryan does, you know, the Ryan Fund and everything that, you know, that he's about, please go to his website, RyanTakingStock.com. Ryan, thank you so much for being on the show. You are an angel, and I will pray for you.
I don't know about that, but I really appreciate it.
Yeah,
thank you.
Well, yeah, all of a sudden, my mother would have said I was, you know, an angel. My halo is being held up by horns. Maybe yours too. I don't
know. Yeah.
But you are indeed an angel for a lot of people, I'm sure. So thank you.
I appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Folks, next week my guest is going to be a colleague, Crystal Lee Quivel, who's another Vivid Life host, and she's going to be talking about literary speaking, the pros and cons of being in the literary world, you know, being a prolific writer. So she's going to be on next week. And I also want to let you know about something that I'm involved in. That coming up in January, I'm going to be one of the featured speakers, teachers, healers on a healing water holistic cruise to Tortola, St. Thomas, and a private island in the Bahamas. And it's January 21st through the 28th, so it'll be a great way to start your new year. Go to www.scott-travel.com. So until next week, I thank you, I bless you, I love you. Namaste.
Thank you for joining us on It's All About Relationships on Vivid Life Radio. I'm your host, Edie Weinstein, asking you the all-important question, what does your vivid life look like? Hoping that it includes fulfilling and thriving relationships in all areas. Until next time, sending you abundant love from here.
You're listening to Vivid Life Radio, talk radio that connects you to the most current, optimistic, and inspiring conversations on the planet. Get ready to be catapulted into your happiest, healthiest, and wealthiest life ever. Go to vividlife.me. That's vividlife.me for details on our previous and upcoming conversations with the world's brightest minds sharing their wisdom for happier, healthier, and wealthier lives.